The modern suburban landscape. The Depression, which prevented people all across the country from being able to afford property, and the preoccupation with wartime activities during World War II, helped maintain San Pedro Valley's isolation and slow growth through the 1940s. However, with the end of the war, things began to change. Returning GYs and their families needed places to live, and the rural farmlands south of San Francisco became a magnet for developers. In the late 1940s, Henry Doelger started the Westlake development on the outskirts of Daly City and provided a model for developments farther south on the coast. In 1953, Andy Odstad came to San Pedro Valley, and with the help of Ray Higgins, a prominent San Francisco real estate man, bought seven of the largest ranches in the valley in one weekend. Ray Higgins was already familiar with the valley, having bought parcels of old Ocean Shore Land Company land back in 1927 in anticipation of the construction of Highway 1. Ray Higgins had also bought Sanchez's old adobe from Baroness Marguerite Kirkpatrick in 1946. He later sold the adobe and its immediate surrounding land to San Mateo County in 1947, and preservation of the by-now deteriorated adobe started in 1953. Odstad, whose uncles had built the Stonestown development in San Francisco, had written his engineering thesis on low-cost housing and had always aspired to be a builder. He built his first house in 1946 in San Francisco, and in less than 20 years, had the third largest building firm in the Bay Area, with over 11,000 houses and apartment buildings bearing his name. Odstad's building philosophy was to reduce building to its lowest denominator, to provide good homes within reach of many. While doing his military training as a Navy scuba diver, Odstad became familiar with the North Coastside beaches and realized that after the war, people who could not find affordable housing in San Francisco because of the housing crunch would need someplace else to go. His first development plan for San Pedro Valley took shape in the western half of the valley and was given the name Lindamar 11. Odstad recognized that San Pedro Valley was the largest and best residential area within commuter range of San Francisco. Word of Odstad's purchasing San Pedro Valley land was big news, and Dick Harris, a reporter for the San Francisco News, sat on the story until Odstad was able to complete his initial valley acquisitions. The Lindamar development was the first big post-war development outside of San Francisco and was to be the creation of a new community out of the beautiful but raw coastal hills and plains. To introduce longtime coastside residents to the new development of Lindamar, Pedro Valley Day was held in June of 1953. The purpose of the event was to acquaint our citizens with the tremendous possibilities of the area, recreational, residential, and commercial, and with the impact it will have on our present mode of living, and to raise funds for a new committee that hoped to incorporate the North Coastside into a new city and no longer be wards of the county. Events included tours of six model homes, tours of Sanchez's adobe, and fishing at the Gay's Trout Farm. Promoters of development maintained that the rural feel of the landscape would be preserved. The rapid growth and development of the North Coastside appears most promising, but nevertheless, this North Coastal area will always present a rural atmosphere, with the hills always in view to the east and south and on the west, the broad expanse of ocean stretching out to meet the horizon. Sharp Park Breakers, 1953A. San Pedro Valley, nostalgically described as a serene, spectacularly beautiful spot where a few ranches were the only indication of progress so far during its artichoke-growing days, was transformed with the construction of 3,000 inexpensive homes by Odstad's Sterling Homes. Houses outpaced the infrastructure, however. And when the first Lindamar residents arrived on December 16, 1953, they had to dig their own wells or buy brackish water from nearby pumps until the NCCWD started laying pipes in the valley and delivering water. For Lindamar's first 2 years, the only food market was the Sun Valley Dairy at Shamrock Ranch, and the region grew so fast that the phone company could not keep pace with connecting phone lines. There were many North Coastside residents who did not like what Odstad was doing in Lindamar, and there were a number of angry planning board meetings as Odstad, in his words, struggled to start a community with no sewage, water, schools, streets, or anything. Capitalizing on the need for a supermarket, Henry Dolger, who Odstad once worked for, came to the valley in 1955 and started construction of the Lindamar Shopping Center on the east side of Highway 1. The Purity Supermarket was the main attraction, along with a pharmacy, ice cream store, donut shop, shoe repair, Wells Fargo Bank, and camera store. In 1961, the Purity Market was remodeled, almost doubling its size and making it the largest Purity in Northern California. San Pedro Valley changed rapidly after 1953, as did the rest of the North Coast side, as developers bought up land and started construction of housing developments, Sharp Park Breakers 1953A. In 1955, 1,200 new families moved into the North Coast side, with 700 of those moving into Lindamar alone. In August of 1955, family number 1,000 had moved into Lindamar and, as a special bonus, was given $4,000 in gifts by Andy Odstad. Talk soon began of incorporating the various North Coast Side hamlets into one city. The North Coast Side, up to this point, had always been unincorporated county land and was not fully represented on the County Board of Supervisors. It did not have its own library, recreation facilities, or police force. Residents had to rely on the county sheriff's office with the nearest substation over the coastal mountains in Burlingame. Some residents believed that a better community could be had by incorporation and self-government. However, it was water and garbage dumps that finally stirred the North Coast Side residents into action. In 1955, Odstad, growing weary over battles with the NCCWD to supply water to Lindamar, asked the city of San Bruno to annex Lindamar. A furious campaign ensued in San Bruno as the matter was put to the voters. North Coast Side residents sent pamphlets against annexing Lindamar to the San Bruno voters, who rejected Odstad's proposal. North Coast Side residents then recalled the publicly appointed NCCWD board and set in motion new policies that would ensure an adequate water supply to Lindamar. This victory was the first step towards incorporation. Garbage became the next hot topic for North Coast Side residents. In 1956, Daly City wanted to annex part of the Bernardi Ranch deep in San Pedro Valley for the Coast Side Scavenger Company to use as a dump. The Bernardis owned some 600 acres in the back of the valley, having formed a syndicate back in the 1920s in order to purchase land. The Pittos, founders of the Coastside Scavenger Company, had purchased land along the Sanchez Fork in 1942 and wanted an inexpensive supply of garbage to feed their hogs. They also raised cattle and horses, farmed, and had a productive fruit orchard. The county rejected the plan. As suburbs in the county grew, so did the garbage problem. In 1957, Daly City annexed Muscle Rock at the northernmost end of the North Coast Side for a dump, and San Bruno attempted to annex land along Sharp Park Road and Skyline Boulevard for another dump, land in plain sight of the Westview housing development. The Coast Side Scavenger Company finally got county approval to convert part of the Bernardi Ranch into a dump, so angering valley residents that they hung an effigy of County Supervisor Tom Callan at the entrance to Lindamar. North Coast Side residents in favor of incorporation used the garbage issue to push their cause. Papers were filed petitioning the county supervisors for incorporation to delay the annexation attempt by San Bruno, and North Coast Side residents were given a chance to vote on the issue. Many of the area's young new families were in favor of incorporation, arguing that they were people motivated by the spirit of growth, a healthy growth for ourselves, family, and community, and that they were pioneers in a region that until recently was largely artichoke patches. In the election on October 28, 1957, the move to incorporate won by a narrow margin. The new city was christened Pacifica. The ensuing 2.5 decades saw the truck farming and early suburban landscapes of San Pedro Valley give way to the modern suburban landscape of today. Linda Mar streets were laid out in a curvilinear pattern with a number of cul-de-sacs. The main artery, Linda Mar Boulevard, was given a slightly sinuous path parallel to, but several blocks north of the creek and once east of Sanchez's old adobe, followed the old road that led into the back of the valley. Development occurred on a parcel-by-parcel basis, as can be seen on the 1956 USGS map produced shortly after development started, figure 21. Some streets end abruptly or turn sharply at property lines, with only a few streets running the length of the valley. For a while, blocks of tract housing shared the valley with artichoke ranches. As adjacent lots were bought and developed, new streets continued on the presumed path of, but not always connected to the older streets. By 1956, housing stretched the length of the valley to the confluence of the Middle and South Forks. Most of what used to be Lake Matilda was occupied by the Linda Mar Shopping Center on the south and by housing of the Anza Arguello neighborhood on the north. The Linda Mar Elementary School, on the south side of the valley across from Shamrock Ranch, was built by this time. The hillsides and valley of the North Fork San Pedro Creek had not been developed, and farming still existed in the fields that lined the creek. However, grading on the hilltops just north of Sanchez's adobe indicated that housing was soon to follow. Figure 22. Pedro Point also saw a boom in house building. Compared to the 1939 USGS map, the 1956 map shows a number of new streets dotted with houses climbing up the north slope of Pedro Point. Land was still cheap, and 50-square-foot lots could be had for $1,500 in the late 1950s, Larson, 1989A. A 1957 photo taken from the hills above Sanchez's adobe, possibly from around the water tank shown on the USGS maps, shows Linda Mar in its infancy. The photograph looks toward the ocean, showing row after row of new single-story homes. There are no trees in the valley, at least nothing of any height, helping create a stark sense of newness to the scene. By 1968, most of the valley and the hills to its north had been developed, figure 23. The largest area of post-1956 development is in the hills just north of Linda Mar Boulevard, with some infilling in the valley as more of the artichoke ranches were bought out. Figure 21. Portion of the 1956 USGS 7.5-minute Montera Mountain map showing San Pedro Valley, USGS 1956A. Figure 22. 1956 USGS aerial photo showing the eastern half of San Pedro Valley, seen just to the left of center, USGS 1956B. The grading on the hilltop can be. Figure 23. Portion of the 1968 USGS 7.5-minute Montera Mountain map showing San Pedro Valley, USGS 1968A. The North Fork. San Pedro Creek had all but disappeared from the map. During the early 1960s, almost its entire reach was buried in a culvert, most of it under Odstad Boulevard. By 1966, a large part of the Park Pacifica development had been constructed in the valley of the North Fork along Odstad Boulevard and on the hills to the northwest by Challenge Development Corporation, the new moniker for Odstad's building company. Odstad had died in 1964. In 1960, a second shopping center, Sea Village Shopping Center, was built in Linda Mar on the south side of San Pedro Creek across Highway 1 from the Linda Mar Shopping Center. Pacifica's second supermarket, a Safeway, opened here in 1962. 5 new elementary schools and Terra Nova High School had been built in the valley and its surrounding hills by 1968. An adequate number of schools was always a problem in the early years of Linda Mar. High school students traveled to Daly City to attend double sessions at a school there. Odstad School was built adjacent to the site of the old dump at Bernardi Ranch along Odstad Boulevard, and the smell of trash and swarms of flies greeted the new students. The new high school was built in 1961 on a site that once had grazing sheep. The school's architect, Corwin Booth, designed the building with a Moorish feel and incorporated the topography of the site into the design, rather than just leveling the ground. Booth did not want the school to have an institutional feel and used graceful arches to lend a playfulness to the school. Andy Odstad took out a full-page advertisement in the Pacifica Tribune, praising and congratulating the new high school. In the ad, he invites Linda Marr residents to cheer our new Terra Nova Tiger football team to victory and states, "People of Pacifica have every right to be filled with pride. Together, we have all created a new progressive influence on our whole community." Despite the growing development, two of San Pedro Valley's smaller valleys continued to be farmed in 1968. The Weiler Ranch property in the Valley of the Middle Fork and the last remnant of the Picardo Ranch behind Terra Nova High School. A 1980 USGS map shows development in San Pedro Valley as all but complete, figure 24. There had been a small amount of infilling in the main part of the valley just south of Sanchez School and Park Pacifica at the south end of Odstad Boulevard had expanded into some of the hills to the southeast, while further development spread up the length of the North Fork's valley. Two-story townhouses had spread along Terra Nova Boulevard south of the high school, and a third shopping center, Park Mall Center, with another Safeway, had been built at the junction of Terra Nova and Odstad Boulevards. At the mouth of San Pedro Valley on land that was once the north edge of Lake Matilda, the Bell Telephone Company built a long-distance phone operations center at the junction of Crespi Drive and Highway 1 in 1972. The building was later shut down due to groundwater problems and poor drainage. Also in 1972, Park Pacifica residents planted 850 tree seedlings on the hill slopes above Odstad Boulevard as part of a community planting project. In 1988, the people of the state of Catalonia of Spain gave to Pacifica a statue of Gaspar de Portola to place by an historical marker at the intersection of Highway 1 and Crespi Drive, the approximate location where Portola's expedition turned inland after leaving their camp along San Pedro Creek and started the uphill march to Sweeney Ridge and their view of San Francisco Bay. The statue was dedicated on November 4th, on the 219th anniversary of Portola's discovery of San Francisco Bay. Comparison of the aerial extent of development, as shown on the 1980 map to USGS maps, made in 1993 and 1997, figure 25A and B, is somewhat misleading. On the later maps, the USGS changed its map style, and urban areas are shown with a gray fill instead of the pink and purple fills used previously. These maps show all of San Pedro Valley and the Northside Hills in a gray fill, giving the impression that housing covers areas shown as undeveloped in 1980. However, some of these areas have no streets and no homes. The spread of housing had mostly ended by 1980. Despite the rapid transformation from farming community to suburb, the valley still maintained some elements of a bucolic rural landscape into the 1980s. Figure 24. Portion of the 1980 USGS 7.5-minute Montera Mountain map showing San Pedro Valley and surrounding hillsides, USGS 1980. Figure 25A and B, portions of the 1993 and 1997 USGS 7.5-minute Montera Mountain maps showing San Pedro Valley and surrounding hillsides, USGS 1993 and 1997. Housing advertisements offered wooden lots, smog-free fresh clean air, and the pretty valley where the sun shines, with outdoor amenities that included horseback riding, hiking, golfing, and picnicking. Such descriptions had been in use since at least the 1940s to lure people to come to the valley to visit. Now they were being used to help sell homes. Horses figured prominently in the early Lindamar landscape, with riders trotting down the neighborhood streets on their way to the trails in the surrounding hillsides. Riding was fast becoming one of the city's most popular outdoor recreations, Pacifica Tribune 1961C. Along with the horses came manure and complaints from Lindamar residents. One resident commented that the streets looked like a cow pasture because of all the manure, and that neighborhood children rode their bikes through it, walked in it, and even fell in it. It was tracted all through her house when her kids came home. She enjoyed living in Lindamar and liked horses, but did not understand why people rode their horses on the streets instead of on the trails that led up the valley. Horses were so popular in the early 1960s that Lindamar merchants held a contest to give a free horse to the child who came up with the best name for it during Western days, a festival started by the merchants of the newly constructed Lindamar Shopping Center and was complete with store clerks dressed in Western garb. Western Days was later renamed Frontier Days, was financed by local businesses and an independent citizens committee, and became an annual week-long event held in the summer. It culminated in a rodeo held at various locations in or near the valley, including the Rockaway Quarry, just to the north. Frontier Days ended in 1984 when the quarry owner withdrew use of the property. To help promote Frontier Days, the Pacifica Tribune ran a special edition during the festival titled The Artichoke Gulch Gazette. "Artichoke Gulch is a state of mind," writes C. Urchin in an op-ed piece, "and the Artichoke Gulch Gazette is a newspaper invented after the fact to relive history, poke fun, and in general help create an aura of the Old West during Frontier Days." Paul Azevedo was even more nostalgic when he wrote, "The railroad died, and Artichoke Gulch slumbered until wars and better roads and expanding suburbs ended Artichoke Gulch forever. Except once a year when again we ride horses, pretend to brand our calves, and look back with nostalgia on a day long gone, a day when a few score immigrants from many different countries across the sea formed a community, helped each other, sent for wives from the old countries, raised their children, and became Americans, each in his turn." The Western theme was further promoted by Frontierland, a Western theme park built in 1960, in the natural setting behind Pacifica's hills and mountains, towards the back of the North Fork Valley, with a rifle range for a neighbor, property previously owned by the Bernardis. The developers wanted to create a true view of the Old West for the children of today and tomorrow. The park's master plan included a human-made lake with a reproduction of San Francisco's Barbary Coast, camping areas, stables, a roping area, a square dancing platform, and a frontier-style hotel complete with chuck wagon facilities. The developers hired Frank James to be the park's superintendent. He later became Pacifica's number one public relations person. James was originally from the Midwest, but despite the non-Western background, that man is today acclaimed far and wide as Pacifica's genuine cowboy and fast gun. He performed gun shooting shows at the park's rodeo ring on Sunday afternoons, where he preached a message of gun safety and responsibility. Rodeos were planned at the park, and even when it was only in partial operation, the park received as many as 1,000 weekend visitors. It was hoped by Frontierland boosters that the park would be a Disneyland-type asset to the coastside. In counterpoint to Frontier Days, Indian Heritage Day was held at San Pedro Valley County Par in 1986. Upwards of 200 people attended and were taught traditional games, wicker basket weaving, and how to make spear and arrowhead points. Malcolm Margolin spoke. He had devoted his life to studying and writing about the Olone and the richness of wildlife that was once present in the Bay Area. The event culminated with a traditional dance by the Pomo Miwok Indian dancers. Despite the more realistic portrayal of the valley's historical landscape, Indian Heritage Days did not elicit the nostalgia or enthusiasm as Frontier Days. A more enduring link to the valley's agricultural past has been Shamrock Ranch. The ranch remains county land and has resisted development pressures over the years. When Doc Denman was forced to give up raising dairy cows, he started a dog boarding kennel at the ranch that was soon one of the Bay Area's largest kennels. The building that housed the Sun Valley Dairy Store was converted to an animal feed and dog grooming supply store. Cabins were built at the ranch over the years and could be rented for short or long-term stays, offering a sanctuary for people who wanted a place a step out of the 19th century, although some of the tenants also used the place to hide from the law. By the late 1970s, the ranch was slipping into decay and Doc Denman died in 1979. One of Shamrock Ranch's residents was Jim Evans, who moved there as a child in 1953. When not helping out around the ranch, Jim spent his youth playing. He liked to make tunnels and rooms in the barn's hay bales and jump into piles of hay from a rope swing. He and other children also built rope swings on overhanging willow branches along the ranch's creek and explored the creek's length, starting from its headwaters at a small spring at the head of the valley above the ranch on the north flank of San Pedro Mountain. The creek, which could have dangerously high flows in winter, passed through a culvert under Lindemar Elementary School and emptied into San Pedro Creek. Evans' other childhood pastimes included wading in San Pedro Creek up to the old trout farm and walking to the dump at the old Bernardi Ranch to look for treasure and use old coffee can lids as tin frisbees. The transition period from the truck farming landscape and early suburban landscape to the modern suburban landscape was met with mixed response. Spanish architects visiting the Bay Area in 1961 were given a tour of Lindemar and admired the new homes with their all-electrical appliances. They thought they were still in San Francisco as they gazed out over the expanse of hills and homes. Longtime Pedro Terrace resident, Mrs. Grace Ray, who remembered Lindemar as an artichoke patch, liked the new housing developments, commenting that the hillsides should be covered with homes, for they offered magnificent views of the ocean and a great place to live. Although she had fond memories of her childhood years on the artichoke ranches, Gloria Hoyt is happy that homes were built in the area because it allowed her and her husband to move back to a place that she always thought was beautiful. Some of the ranchers, although not necessarily wanting to sell their farms, respected Andy Odstad, referred to as such a nice man by Francis Malaviar, and accepted it as fate that the valley's landscape was to change. Odstad reassured the Malaviers that they were helping to house thousands of people and offered to name one of the new residential streets after them. Gabriel Malavier commented, "We liked the way it was," but added, "We had no choice but to sell. Taxes were already going up. We didn't really want to sell, but they kept the ranch house and a small portion of their property and started growing heather on the hillside in 1955. They sold this last piece of their property in the late 1950s to the Bedinis, who started a flower nursery and constructed a greenhouse across the street from the house. The Malaviers bought one of the new Lindemar homes and continued living in the valley. Whatever their feelings, it appears most ranchers did well financially when they sold their property. Others were more critical of the changes. Despite the heat of summer, flies swarming in the kitchen, and the pig's slop bucket just outside the kitchen door, Julia Gervais still wanted to visit her family's artichoke farm as it used to be. Her family's ranch had become part of the Pitto Ranch, and in the 1960s, the land became part of Willowbrook Estates. In 1962, homes were advertised in this exclusive area as having the best climate in Pacifica, Pacifica Tribune. The developers of Willowbrook Estates, realizing that the community is starved for something besides mass housing, planned to construct homes that would preserve the beauty of the valley and not disturb the creek. Although Willowbrook Estates continued the suburbanization of the valley, its developers sought to avoid the aesthetic shortcomings built to date. The Brynjolfssons, escaping from San Francisco in the late 1940s, bought 2 acres in San Pedro Valley with an old 1920s house and a creek in the front yard. Mr. Brynjolfsson spoke nostalgically of the old dirt road, later oiled to keep the dust down, that led up the valley, of riding for miles around the area without running into a single house, and of barbecues with friends from San Francisco. They sold the property to Odstad in the early 1960s, and their old house was set ablaze as practice for the local fire department. Mr. Brynjolfsson lamented that sometimes I'd like to see it all back like it was when we first came here. In what is an ironic symbol of the conflicting feelings regarding the changing valley landscape, Mr. Brynjolfsson, who was a bricklayer for Odstad Homes, helped build many of the houses in Lindamar, probably including the houses on his old property.